Good evening, everyone. This is Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock, and we are working our way through the ABD guidebook by E.J. Gold. And where we are specifically, this is part four of a presentation by our esteemed subgroup that is unveiling the meaning behind book three. And would you, and I'm going to turn it completely over to the group, because Tamara's going to give us the exact name of the book.
Lalit.
The third book of the dead.
Whose name means the sovereign, the king, the divine real. And now I'm going to ask for you all to sort of settle, take a breath, let the cares of the day fall away, and we will begin by opening the space with a reading of the clear light.
Confronting the clear light. Now I am experiencing the clear light of objective reality. Nothing is happening. Nothing ever has happened or ever will happen. My present sense of self, the Voyager, is in reality the void itself, having no qualities or characteristics. I remember myself as the Voyager, whose deepest nature is the clear light itself. I am one. There is no other. I am the voidness of the void, the eternal unborn, the uncreated, neither real nor unreal. All that I have been conscious of is my own play of consciousness. A dance of light, the swirling patterns of light in infinite extension, endless endlessness, the absolute beyond change, existence, reality. I, the Voyager, am inseparable from the clear light. I cannot be born, die, exist, or change. I know now that this is my true nature.
We turn now to our scholar, monk, Silverdale, to revisit the understandings that he communicated last week. Last night, I asked him to speak briefly what his practical experience was of working with the idea of establishing conscious habits. He had shared a very insightful revelation for me, which is that each of the books that we were studying represented a conscious habit. And I asked him to maybe talk to me about what his practical experience was of establishing a conscious habit. So I turn now to Silverdale.
Thank you, Auntie Mater. Good evening, fellow Voyagers. United together, we strive toward awakening. So, as Tamara just mentioned, I've been asked to provide just a brief summary of what I presented last week regarding a body of habits, which I lifted from verse 26 of the third book of the dead called the Book of Umalik. What that verse 26 says is this: And the body you have now is called the body of habits. Now, since the body is of spirit and not of material flesh and blood, whatever comes to you now as sounds, lights, or radiations are all unable to cause you harm. So a very important idea, a body of habits. Last week I read two selections that that developed this idea, body of habits. The first was from a pamphlet that E.J. published in 1976 entitled Psyche and Essence, Their Nature and Construction, which states simply that the package which survives death and rebirth intact is called the essence. It is composed of 18 primordial forms called basic habits, which is why some forms of the teaching call the essence the body of habits. A habit is nothing more than the automatic tendency to do or not to do certain things. One could say that the habits which comprise the essence create the karma of that individual. Wow, something important about this word, habit. And so the second selection that I read last week, I took from the book The Joy of Sacrifice, which E.J. published in 1978, but which was originally published as a pamphlet in 1974 entitled Sacrifices, the Letters of Al-Washi, which states this. The nature of the quarter of madness, that is the transit state, is such that one is left with the identity and ability to take action in the present only with habits. One could say that in the deepest self, one is nothing but habits, for only habits survive transition. So then I went on to say that our work efforts at the present time are designed and intended to replace the unconscious basic habits of our historical personality, which is really nothing more than a random accumulation arising from heredity, what we kind of get from our parents, and from conditioning, that is the environment that we're raised in. And what we wish to do when we become aware of this possibility is to replace these unconscious basic habits of our historical personality with conscious, with the 18 primordial forms of the essence called basic habits. So we want to replace unconscious habits with conscious habits arising from essence itself. And to illustrate this, and to illustrate maybe the progress that each of us individually and all of us together have made, is I'm going to give two examples. We have replaced, this is what I think we've all actually been very successful at, we have replaced the unconscious habit of unconscious living with the conscious habit of self-observation, so that we can increasingly ask ourselves the question, what am I doing and why am I doing it? And it's...
I ask on a regular basis, Silverdale. So thank you.
What's that?
Those are two questions I ask myself on a regular basis, both in the conscious state and the unconscious state. So thank you.
And Tamara, that's what we're all doing, and for me it's evidence of the fact that we're actually reinforcing a state of awakening simply by observation and asking those questions. I'll just remind us of a sentence I've taken out of In Search of the Miraculous, which says, awakening begins when a man realizes that he is going nowhere and does not know where to go. So, and then just a second example of where I think all of us have made great progress, and it serves as an example of the work we still have in front of us, is we replace the unconscious habit of allowing the essence to sleep. So that's an unconscious habit of essence to sleep, and so we spend our whole lives in a state of sleep, and to replace it with the conscious habit of awakening of the essence. And this is called self-remembering. That is, we're trying to learn to separate the essence from its total identification with and submersion in the historical personality. And I might observe that we've become nearly pathological in our wish to self-remember and devote a lot of our time to this inner examination of self-remembering, which enables us to develop this basic habit. But that's, again, I think, a sign of progress. Anyway, I then went on to comment that in my opinion, this American Book of the Dead guidebook provides us with a map of those 18 primordial forms of essence that we can develop consciously once our essence has begun to awake. So, for example, as I said, if we take the first book, the Book of Ula, I am Ula, I am he who exists by virtue of essence alone. Wow, wouldn't that be a nice conscious habit to have? I have no other name than I am that I am. So that's a basic habit which actually develops naturally and instinctively by the essence once it has begun to awaken. These things become just self-evident. It's only us learning about it all that it seems new. Or, for example, the second book of the dead, Urakman, I am Urakman the Compassionate. I have compassion even for those who do not recognize me. My compassion is love without return. So again, an important basic habit of essence. And finally, this third book of Umalik, I am he who is independent of existence for my essence and qualities. But upon me is everything that is in existence dependent. So these further basic habits, which we will continue to uncover as we proceed through this guidebook, enable the essence to grow and develop and awaken to its nature, its properties, and its functionality. And gradually the essence dies to its identification with the historical personality, and emerges from the corridor of madness with a transit state, freshly born without complexity. And we've then developed our essence. And then I just want to remind us all that this is an extremely gradual, law-conformable process that occurs over a fairly long period of time, 20 years, let's say. And it has been illustrated as how the yolk of an egg consumes the albumen in order to produce a chickadee. So our essence, as we develop conscious habits of essence, gradually diminishes the force and power of our historical personality. Now, I'm going to finish simply by saying a friend called me earlier this week to discuss all of this and asked me if we can make a correlation between the 18 sacrifices named in the book, The Joy of Sacrifices, and the various books within the ABD guidebook. And my answer is simply that the Book of Sacrifices, in my opinion, represents a list of various habits that we've accumulated unconsciously and that form the historical personality, and all of that must be jettisoned in order to make room for the development of the conscious habits of essence, which enable us to be in the present, whether in daily life or during the transit state between this life and the next one. And so I think that's about what I have to share at this time.
Thank you very much, Abigail. I really appreciate the connections that you make for me. I know your discussion of the corridor of madness and connecting it with the transit state was very helpful. And tonight, the 18 sacrifices, you know, it seems like you're saying that those 18 are the unconscious habits that we've assembled, and then the sacrifice is the process of restoring or developing the conscious habits. So thank you. So part of the book of Il Marik also is looking at the five primal elements of consciousness. And it's important that these are recognized as forms of our own consciousness. So in order for us to become more familiar with what these forms, these primal forms are, Alchemy is going to do a discussion of the forms, and then I'm then going to do like just a brief overview from the Buddhist perspective. So Alchemy, enlighten us.
Hi, good morning everyone. Good evening everyone. So I begin by talking a little about the elements, and then once we've done that, I'm going to come back to the text and dissect the text from the angle, from the point of view of looking at the text as an instruction towards how to understand the elements. So it said that in the beginning of the universe, when the universe was created, Shakti needed to manifest itself. Shakti was created as an idea, but that idea was so enormous and so huge that it needed to immediately manifest itself. Now, in order to manifest, it started to take form, and it is said that it immediately manifested itself in 24 elements, which are called the 24 tattvas. But these five elements were the primordial manifestations, because it immediately, when it was created, it needed to express itself, it needed to feel, it needed to be heard, it needed to taste, it needed to have associations and interaction with the world. So in its manifestation, first came into existence ether. The first element is ether, through which constitutes as the base of transmission of anything, of sound or object. Anything is traversed through ether. So it created, manifested, Shakti manifested itself in form of ether to begin with. Then it wanted to be touched. It wanted to have a feeling of touching something or recognizing something through its outer form and its physical interaction with the outer form. And that's why air was created to generate that Sparsh Roop. So the first form is called Shabd Roop, which means the form of word. And the second manifestation, the manifestation in form of the air element, happened through Sparsh Roop, which is the touch form. And then the third manifestation happened in form of, the first manifestation, and the third manifestation happened in form of Agni. I'm forgetting what is the form, what is the roop of it. And the fourth manifestation happened in form of water when it needed to taste and internalize. It needed to manifest itself in Ras Roop, which is the fluid or juice form. And the fifth manifestation happened in form of earth because it needed to smell. I'll have to really go deeper into understand why is earth smell and why is water taste. But this is, I'm just sharing what I was able to compile from some resources. So the fifth manifestation, I can validate it because I've heard my teacher talk in the same terminology, not exactly these words, but he has basically touched upon these ideas at some point in the past. So these five elements then were further subdivided into four parts each, and each of them function at various levels. When we say they function at various levels, the two levels, which are the two levels which are very essential for us to read for this particular book, are they manifest at Nitya level, which is Nitya means eternal. That happens every time is Nitya. So these elements exist at the Nitya level, wherein they are eternal. They don't have bodily form. And then they exist at the Anitya level, which is the Kaya level, which is the body level. So there is a physical, tangible existence of these elements, and then there is a intangible and eternal existence of these elements. So when we talk about the physical manifestation of these elements, we talk about the manifestation of the elements in the universe, in how we can see rivers, and we can touch sand, and we can touch water, and we can breathe air, so we can feel it. So earth would be, we can see at the jeev, the form and the perishable part of it, and then we can see at it at the atom level, which is called the Parmanu level. The lowest denomination possible of a particular element is called the Parmanu level, which is which you can't really see, when your body is at earth level. It is an organic manifestation of the earth element. And when you burn it, when it dies, the body does not remain, but the lowest particle after disintegration then goes back and merges into the original universe, which is also constituted of the five elements. And then water you can touch, but then when you break it down to element level, then it disintegrates and merges with the eternal form of that element. And so is with air. You can breathe, and then it manifests itself in what you can't breathe also is still there. If you break down air, I don't know how do you break down air and what could be the lowest denomination, but each of these elements work at the Parmanu level, which is the lowest essential atomic existence level, and the Anitya level, which is the bodily existence of these levels.
I just wanted to say just a second, Alchemy, that really kind of makes sense. In the Christian framework, they talk about how that, we are created in God's image. And in the ABD, it talks about that, even though you've dropped your physical body, there is still a spiritual body that continues. So if I'm understanding you right, these five elements span the whole continuum from our physical all the way to the eternal, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Now, moving on further, and we can just keep getting deeper into it, and but every text is essentially saying the same. thing. And then when we, moving further, when we talk about the existence of the elements at the anitya level, which is the kaya level and the body level, then we also see the other functions of it. The first function of it is where Shakti manifested itself. It needed to smell, it needed to touch. So each of these elements is related to the five senses, is in the bodily form, is its first bodily function. And when I talk about the other bodily functions, then each of these elements has a essence of its own. It has a quality of its own, which also manifests itself in the body in form of what we call energies, or what we call as different energy centers, which would be the main five energy centers. So if I talk about centers, then each of the chakras then stands for an element, and each of the chakras and each of the elements then has a corresponding positive action and a corresponding negative action. So when we talk about earth, it is the Mooladhar chakra, which you know, which is like the earth. It is it has positive aspects also, and it has negative aspects also. The negative aspect would be, you know, if earth can just go on, there is no end. So endurance would be a positive, that, you know, no matter what happens, earth will always, there will always a plant, a shrub that will shoot out. And the negative aspect of Mooladhara is greed, that you, when you're centered in Mooladhara, you want more and more. You know, there's never enough. It can just keep on taking more and more, and there's really no end to it. And when we talk about the, yes?
Hang on.
There's a question.
Which chakra again?
Mooladhara. I think it's called the sacral.
The root chakra, right?
The root chakra, yes. Mooladhara is the root chakra.
Yeah.
The root chakra then stands for earth, which is, you know, which is unquenchable in terms of desires and experiences, but it is also endurant in producing or creating. Then the second element would be associated with Manipur chakra, which is the solar plexus, I believe. And that has got to do with fire, you know. So the negative of it would be fear, wherein, and the positive of it would be, I don't know what. But I'm just, you know, giving you a basic understanding of these elements.
So fire, you know, you have warmth, and if you look at the central chakra, the digestion, being able to assimilate.
Solar plexus.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, no, the next one in this is the solar plexus.
We're answering a question here, alchemy.
Yeah. And you know, fire then has passion, which can therefore, of course, be direction. And so you use it, so they're there in their natural forms, and they'll go lower or higher. And I think to tie back into what Silverdale was telling us, that when it goes lower, there are, it's called unconscious habits. And if we can convert those to something different, then the higher is available to us.
Right.
So we don't get rid of the senses. We don't get rid of those things. We convert them to the holy.
Absolutely. So this duality of each of the elements, each of these elements, and the ability to transform in each of these elements gives the soul or the jivatma or even the universe to, you know, be very, very dynamic and very, very susceptible and open and you know, corresponding to intent. The next element is air, which stands with the anahat, which is the heart chakra. And again, I'm not getting into the explanation of the positive and negative because I'm not very clear of it. To air, to me, anahat stands for you know, reverberating with through the medium of ether, these encompassing and these you know, beneficiary and concerned emotions. So then we can also say that, you know, they're also, all these five elements are also the basis of all the emotions, because each of the traits is leads to corresponding emotions, which leads to corresponding actions. So it's not that we are able to control our physical form, but we can control our emotional being and our existence in totality if we master these five forms. Then the next element is Akash or Ether, which is related to the Vishuddhi chakra, which is the throat chakra. And the negatives of it is jealousy and envy. And the positive of it is Vivek. Vivek means discernment. You know, it has the it can see truth from untruth, and it can hold it within its form. I will then probably, I can, you know, write all of this down in a little more clarity and mail it across to be posting on the forum as well.
Yeah, that's a different, that's an interesting approach to jealousy and envy, and the idea that the positive is determination. The envy is a passive element. I envy another. I envy what that person wants, and there's an acquisitive side to it. There's a negative side to it. But there's fundamental to it is the passion, the recognition of it as a value, whatever it is, which we'll get into in a minute, however it manifests for each individual. But then to flip it and you realize, I'm determined that that element of envy is what's important for my being, therefore I seek it directly.
Absolutely, David. Thank you for clarifying this.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. These things are, like, envy, you know, like, which goes out of the throat chakra. I've not realized that before, but something like envy would... is a nasty thing because of its passivity.
Right.
That's the thing that's wrong with it. It's this passivity that is wrong. Yeah, there's a recognition.
Yes, something is seen.
Something is seen, recognized, and valued.
Right.
And then what do you do with it? Oh, I want yours. And there's this malicious side to envy, of course, that is utterly passive. Now, here's the other element, and Silverdale, you can ring in on this. It's because as individuals in locked into sleep and locked into our historical personality, we don't know any other way. We don't know that there's another way. We don't know that I can get this for myself. If I see this great speaker out there or a great runner or a great communicator or one loaded with compassion, rather than take it from them, I can wonder, first of all, why do I recognize that?
Right.
Why do I recognize that?
And that's the discernment underneath the...
Underneath that, and I think that's what you're saying,
Alka, wisdom.
That there's, if you slow down a little bit and self-observe, there you can then convert that which is passive and therefore negative often,
right,
and convert it to something higher. Uh-oh, there's a problem there.
Which is?
It takes work.
Okay.
Is there a question?
Hanjo says, having the opposites of positive and negative for each chakra would be most helpful. Perhaps alchemy could write these down and send them to Wings of Chaos.
Beautiful.
Yes, and when you go a little bit further into it, it's also tied into the six realms. For example, she's talking about the root chakra, the earth. Well, kind of the negative is sort of, David was talking about passivity or laziness, but on the other side, it's, you know, acceptance. It's, you know, and so you kind of, we're talking about the throat chakra, and you can kind of see the aspect of the hungry ghost realm, you know, with the narrow little, you know, throat and the, so each of the realms are connected to these positive and negative emotions. But that's for another book.
Because of what you were saying about envy, it occurs to me that in the Ten Commandments, the only one that deals directly with desire is the last one, thou shalt not covet. Apparently that was important enough to include in the list.
Yeah, it made the list. Top 10.
It made the top 10, you mean? Okay, good.
Thank you, laughter right. So you got us up to the throat. Where do we go now, alchemy?
Okay, now I will quickly read a small paragraph that I have found from Rajan. It talks about the five elements, and it talks about the disintegration of the five elements when we are on the deathbed. So I'll just read it through. As we lie on our deathbed, what emotional, physical, and mental experiences would we go through? The Tibetan Book of the Dead describes them in detail. Let's have an overview. Of course, the American Book of the Dead does it in detail that we are experiencing on an everyday basis. As previously seen, all these experiences are controlled by the Vajranari. So they will come in waves, come and go again, with intensity increasing each time further as the moment of death approaches. The gap between the two waves will decrease. The Tibetans say we are structured in the five elements as death approaches. These five elements withdraw the binding they gave to our human body-brain system. The first to go is earth element, and the immediate feeling is the loss of solidity and support. We may be sleeping on a bed, but we will feel as the support has been withdrawn, because these experiences will come in waves. The feeling of support will return after the wave has passed. You may have an inner feeling of the solidity of the body is dissolving. Momentarily, we will lose our sense of smell. So this is the earth function when it is retreating, and the functions along with it is what the body stops to feel in the physical form. The next to leave is the water element, and we will feel that the juices of our body are drying up. We will get hot flushes in these juices, which allow us to enjoy life. And we could be overcome with a feeling of meaninglessness. Suddenly, a sense of taste would have gone. The next, fire element, will withdraw. This element gives us sight, and we may be swept by momentary blindness. Our loved ones may be at our bedside, but suddenly we will be unable to see them. We will start feeling cold, as if heat has left the body. Then the wind element goes, and we lose the sense of touch. We cannot feel anything and have a deep, empty feeling inside. At the same time, certain feelings will get magnified. Say we have complained a lot in life. Then all the complaining comes together, just as many flowers make a drop of perfume, and we get an expanded feeling of it, finally, which is called the essence. Finally, the sky element, when these elements are leaving, when we confront them, is when these drops are collected and collect with Atma to move further to the next body in their sense. Finally, which is what we were talking about the last year when George also mentioned the essence bit. Finally, the Akash element leaves and we lose the sense of hearing, because sound is the composite, as we just discussed. It is the base of this transmission of any kind of sound. The element leaves and we lose the sense of hearing. If we understand all these symptoms, then at the point of death, we can detach our consciousness from them. This is a little confusing, because what I was reading is that, you know, these five elements also form the consciousness, because the consciousness is guided by the experiences of the five elements.
We have to remember there are two different beings that are on the deathbed there.
Yes.
There's the human body, and to the extent that we are identified with that, these things occur.
Right.
These things occur. Because as we read through the Tibetan Book of the Dead and we read through the American Book of the Dead, we realize that there are signs and sights and smells and sounds and sensations, but they're from a different order. And it's this moment of discernment that we must start to work with diligently now.
I cannot die, be born, exist, or change. I know now that this is my true nature. Alchemy, because you've tied in for me the ABD, where it talks about earth sinking into air.
Mm-hmm.
Tying it in with the five elements, that's
very
helpful.
Nice. Very nice.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I have the your writing that you did about a week or so ago. I put that up.
Yes.
Is this a different paper that you're writing now, or?
This is a deeper writing, because, you know, these concepts were absolutely present,
good.
But, you know, when I read through different texts and different sources, then each of the concepts, you know, unfolded, and there was a depth of, you know, even to explain, you know, it's okay to understand and look at it and have it in yourself, but when it comes to speaking about it, you need those words and those descriptions. So,
sure, no question about it. Particularly that quote about at the time of on the deathbed. That's a great quote. If we can put that up there as well, it'd be very useful.
Then I'll start in continuation, since this is where the direction is. This is the direction that we are taking to the discussion. I'll move now to verse 6 of book 3, Ulmalik. It reads as follows: "And he will hear sounds and see lights and feel radiations, and he will become awed and frightened, unless he recognizes these to be his own sounds, his own light, and the radiations of his own primal elements of pure consciousness." And then, moving further, I come to paragraph 8, verse 8, and it says, "And this is the time at which the confrontation with reality must be applied." So this is the stage when, you know, the reality manifests itself in form of these five elements. The being needs to apply, reality must be applied. So the being needs to, you know, have this understanding that everything is these five elements, these sounds, these lights, and sounds because it is the other element in you, the light because it is the fire element in you, sounds because you can hear it, and touch, and all these things are fading because I am one, there is no other. So that the being connectedness to the universe through these five elements, when you know that everything in the universe is a part of me, when that understanding comes, then there is no difference between the two states or three states which are described in the ABD. Well, the first state is the point of separation. At the point of separation, these five elements appear friendly and, you know, divine. And immediately after the point of separation, because there is ego is still centralized, and there is this notion of I that exists, that, you know, I am, I could be this, this element in me could be like this, you know, demonic form. I could be like this, and this decentralized form of ego is still existing, then we are horrified by it. But when, if we are able to develop the understanding that it is everything around us, and there is no difference between me or the concept of I, and then the knowledge, then it says this separation happens when the knowledge appears. This knowledge appears, the separation and ego, and the distance between the five elements and yourself. When this concept of I appears, then everything takes a scary or, you know, judgmental. There is a perspective that is woven around it.
It's that original duality between the subject and the object. And
yes. So then we can pass through the five stages of. So I was reading an article and it says the sukshma sharir, which is our astral body, is constituted of two parts, which is, one part is the maya part, which is the god particle, wherein we see everything as divine, which is when your ego doesn't come in the picture. And then the second part of the sukshma sharir is the jeev part, which is the human part, which, you know, which starts to judge and starts to experience and starts to question everything. So the sukshma sharir also happens at, you know, happen to exist at those two levels which we were mentioning about, the positive and the negative aspect of each element, and corresponds to your sukshma sharir or your atma. And then that's why I was saying that, you know, even this forms your consciousness. It permeates beyond the physical, and it takes the third dimension of traveling in a sense form or soul form, because the soul is still judging, or soul is still. So the soul also needs to be cleansed apart from the body, body cleaning through the prana exercises and the panchbhoot shuddhikaran, and in the waking life state.
Get back to what George was saying about there's the 18, you know, habits
can
be,
yes,
unconscious, or they can become conscious.
Yes.
And well, I know that we're getting close to the end of our time. Are you online, Grant?
Yeah, I'm here.
I just wanted. You know, we've traveled through the five elements and the 18 habits. You were going to put some practicality about how do we work with this in the present moment. So maybe you can tie it all together in a practical way about how we work with it right now in 4 minutes, and then we'll close with a poem. So the pressure's on you, Ben.
One or two last observations that I'll quickly make before this is when we talk about the five elements we associate with the five chakras, there's also a study which, you know, which talks, the Mahabharata study that's happening at the ashram. Bhagwan does it every day, and Rajan has also spoken about it in great depth. So then these five elements are corresponding to the Pandavas in Mahabharata, the five Pandavas. And each of them, and then the discussion about Shakti, which is Sita being married to each of them. And Sita has, which is the Kundalini, has to travel through up each of these, you know, forms, or has to have contact with all these five brothers in order to convert itself to a higher form, or, form is the closest word I can appear to. Gather right now. This is one, and then there are, you know, studies in the Chinese tradition. These five elements have to be in balance. The excess of one element leads to the excess of the other element, and which leads to imbalances. So the Chinese study of elements speaks a lot about harmony, And you know, nourishing each element and paying due attention to each of the elements to ensure harmony of and the perfectness of being is achieved through ensuring that each of the elements is tuned and right, because excess of one will lead to excess of another, and then imbalances will occur. So it is also the body form, you know. So I think it's all connected. And yeah, I'll end here. And then I think Aunty wanted to speak about the, it would be very interesting to hear about the Tibetan form and understanding of the five elements.
Yes, so from the Buddhist perspective, I'll just kind of say them very quickly. And so, Grant, you have even less time. The first form is form, and it's that initial relationship between subject and object. You know, it's the foundation for the development of the ego. We begin to experience ourselves as separate. Then
yes.
Feeling, which is kind of ties in what you were saying about earth and then water. Feeling is a response to sense impressions. It's not emotion like we typically think of it, because it's not a complex. It's sort of that attraction, repulsion, you know, attraction and repulsion. But because there's a reaction, it kind of strengthens our sense of developing self. Then there's perception, and that's when the act of knowing comes in. You know, we begin categorizing, and you can tell it for yourself, where if you're at a distance and you see something and you don't initially recognize it, it's kind of vague. But the minute that you do recognize it, you've named it, and it comes into view. So this is when you begin to really have that sense of naming, and ego is really centralized.
The moment of separation.
Then the fourth, which kind of was touched on by you and then also by George, is this in the Buddhist, and again I'm talking about, you know, Chögyam Rinpoche, who was more contemporary, he used the term conditioning, and that's sort of our characteristic habits, feelings, and ideas, these sort of templates of behavior. We have a whole sort of basic keyboard, but we learn through conditioning to emphasize certain ones. And then the last one is consciousness, but it's not the big consciousness. It's kind of this, what you might call mind. It's fragmented, it's idealistic, you know, it's dualistic. So Grant, any final words for us? Maybe you could close this day for us, and I apologize for...
Here's what I'm thinking, that while I was listening to Alchemy, I really had a wonderful feeling as if I was sitting in an ashram and that we were sharing a wonderful discourse here. And I really enjoyed it, and the idea came to me to ask if possibly we could take this into the ashram at some point, if Alchemy would be willing to do either a weekly session or at least a couple workshops on this.
No, I think Rajan is the right person. I'm not really equipped or trained or even understanding enough to get into these things. This is fine for a discussion on five elements. But I think Rajan is coming to the U.S., Grant, and I could give you his number, and then, you know, you could probably meet him for a discussion.
I would love to.
And, you know, as she pointed out, you find the five elements in the Chinese, you know, tradition. Well,
right.
We are quickly drawing to the time when Ul Malik is to leave. And I thought I would close with a poem that is both a greeting and a goodbye. And it is called, This Body Is Not Me. This body is not me. I am not limited by this body. I am life without boundaries. I have never been born, and I have never died. Look at the ocean and the sky filled with stars, manifestations of my wonderful, true, and miraculous mind. Since before time, I have been free. Birth and death are only doors through which we pass, sacred thresholds on our journey. Birth and death are but the game of hide and seek. So laugh with me. Hold my hand. Let us say goodbye. Say goodbye to only meet again soon. We meet today. We will meet again tomorrow. We will meet at the source every moment. We meet each other in all forms of life. Dedicated to Ulamalik, and as it says in the poem, we will meet again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dad. I would connect with you on Facebook about Rajan's visit, and then we can take it forward from there.
Well, it was book three. This has been a great series of presentations. This is the fourth of and final presentation on the third Book of the Dead called the Book of Ulamalik. And soon we're going to move on to the fourth book. But we maybe next week or not. I'm not sure yet. I have to talk to that group. But this is a fine offering. It's just a fine offering by a lot of work of people working together. And in that group work, you form an alchemy that is just very special. So thank you all to your group. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week on Wednesday, 7 o'clock, for a continuation of the ABD guidebook by E.J. Gold. Good night.
Thanks,
good night. Good night.